This is Helen, Her Stories Handwritten, Part 4. Helen lived at 824 6th Avenue North in Saskatoon for 63 years. On this episode, we read and tell stories about Mum's life at 824 from 1957 to 2020. We hope you enjoy Part 4, all about making a house a home. I'm Helen's son, Dave Dirksen, and my sister Barb helps with the beginning of the story. A24 is the house that you lived in for 60 plus years.
Yes, I was five. No, I was. It was 1957, so I would have been five. And Lynn was just a baby. And I remember when we moved away from the Sutherland house.
But so he built that house and you were living in Sutherland. He was proud of it. This is the mid to late 50s. So moved out of Sutherland in 57. What were the circumstances of that move?
He couldn't afford it. His real estate business was never really thriving. He just helped too many people and he'd have to go around collecting rents.
Because he wasn't ruthless enough to really make the business thrive.
Can you see Dad as a real estate guy, really?
Well, not collecting rents. He would have given people the benefit of the doubt with any sob story probably and said, okay, well, I'll extend you another month or whatever. But so that ended up being the demise of Dirksen Real Estate. What I remember hearing about 824 6th Avenue was that it was kind of the last property that he had access to and that nobody wanted it because it was a dump.
I think it cost like $10,000 or something.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know whether there's any truth to this story because I wasn't born yet, but where moving over there, before anybody could go in, he had to go in and put like a support beam in the basement to hold up the sagging floors. Was that true?
I'll bet that's true, Dave. I'll bet that's true because I remember we didn't sleep upstairs that first night. We all slept in what became the den.
Three kids and two parents. There are five of you in the bed in the den.
And maybe he's worried about the support beam in the basement.
Yeah, quite a start. But then they didn't move again.
No.
Well, not until Mom moved in with you.
63 years or something?
Yeah. 63 years.
When Helen did move, her niece and great-niece and nephews created a keepsake picture book documenting their memories of and feelings about 824. Even without the pictures, the sentiment is clear. Here's what they wrote. Our memories of 824 6th Avenue. A house is not a home, but the welcoming feeling the moment you arrive. You can feel the love and acceptance the moment you enter. Ah, sweet memories of togetherness, written on our hearts and captured in our photos. Home is where the heart is. Your home was always so special to us. We spent many hours around the table visiting and eating together, some at the kids' table. The big table was also used for games. And then there was the room where all the prep work and cooking was done. Aunt Helen is famous for all the delicious snacks and meals she prepared over the years. Ever the handyman, Uncle Merv built the whirlpool room as an addition to the house. The additions also included Pappy and Granny Teeson's apartment. There was always more room outside to work and play. Our hearts are filled with the wonderful memories of you and Uncle Merv and your home at 824 6th Avenue. Lots of love, the Lowen, Clausen, and Spitznagel families. Thanks for the memories that we'll forever cherish. The pictures contained in the memory book are full of people in large groups around tables and on packed couches. Lots of smiles, visiting, lots of eating together, games. Overall, what is clear is that the people there are comfortable and cared for, a definite hallmark of what happened in Helen's home. Here's a recollection of 824 told by Helen's granddaughter, Madeline.
One that I think about a lot, just because Amy, who's my childhood best friend, would bring it up often. There's this one story where Amy and I were on a choir tour, staying near, like very close to Saskatoon, but not in Saskatoon. And we were put into kind of like boarding situations. For a number of reasons, we just felt very uncomfortable in this situation. Nothing like horrible happened. It was just, there's like an uneasiness that we really felt. And I also knew that grandma was so close and I just wanted to be with grandma so badly, because who didn't want to be at 824 with grandma? And so I called her after our first night and I asked grandma if we could come that night and stay with her for one night. And she said, of course. Like, oh, I'll be so happy to have you. I'll set up the beds for you. You know, Amy can have, you know, she explains who's going to have which room and da, 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 da. It's very sweet. And so Amy and I get there at like, I don't know, 8 or 9 even. It was pretty late. You know, we had like the choir, the dinner, blah, blah, blah. And we walk in and it was just so classic. Like grandma had made, I mean, an entire like dinner that was probably like really cheesy, kind of like potato casserole, kind of whatever. And like some sandwich meats and cheese, like really simple, but like not at all, you know. And then she had a chocolate cake. She had made a huge chocolate cake from scratch that day, like chocolate cake with chocolate icing and sprinkles on top. We were like, what? Who makes a birthday cake for someone who's just coming for the night? But that's the kind of stuff she did all the time. It's such an incredible host and like so good at making you feel so special. Amy, truly, she talked about that for years. Remember the cake? Remember the time your grandma made us that chocolate cake? Ooh, that was good.
And you made her happy by eating quite a bit of it, did you?
Oh, yeah. We definitely ate a lot of that chocolate cake with milk.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm sure grandma had like a little shot of Bailey's.
That's a great story. Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to the keepsake book for a moment, when they mention places to work and play outside, of course, lots of backyard games, but there's also one feature that was particular, which was Merv working on some old car jacked up on the driveway. He worked on old cars and kept them going for another day or year. That was something that was notable at 824. And here is Helen's niece, Judith, who helped her write the memory book, with a little recollection about cars.
We miss her, and yet she really does come alive through these writings.
Oh, yes. It was very emotional going through the letters.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sorry, but...
No, all good. I just loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, great.
All right. So this is another part from February the 4th, 2000. I had read... sent her a letter that said that our old Oldsmobile was being towed away. Its life was over and Bob couldn't stand to look at it. He left the house and Mom and I were looking out the window and we're kind of crying as they hauled the old car away. Strange as that is. So this is what your mom was commenting about. It must have been hard on you and Bob to see the Olds towed away. One does get attached to the cars that we own. I know I missed my Blue Jay when it went to Vic and Kathy. And then the Eurosport. Both of them were such good, easily driven cars. However, I like the Olds we have now very much. Of course, Merv is in charge of all the upkeep, so I have no worries there. Just turn any problems I think are happening over to him.
Helen could count on Merv taking charge of repairs and maintenance of cars, as well as the house. He would get pretty creative with some of these projects. And to explore that theme, my sister Lynn reads some pieces about renovations.
I found stuff she wrote about the house. But yeah, the other thing I wanted to talk about was how That was how she would describe work that was going on the house. That was the other topic I came up with. And I'll tell you why I came up with that topic. So in one of her journals from 1996, she wrote, "Ask for forgiveness rather than for permission, Jonathan McNeil."
Her neighbor.
He asked Merv if he had a permit for building the deck. Merv said, "No."
I love that.
Honestly, these projects that happened. So Daddy is really working on his project. The past two Saturdays, he's been digging and building forms for the cement. Yesterday, we had to dig up the yellow rose bush by the old sand pile. It had a huge root that went way down in the earth. The boys dug it up and broke the root. Then we divided it into about six sections. I planted two, Haiti took one, and Karen, our neighbor across the alley, took the others. That must have been tough when all that got dug up, you know?
Yeah, that was for the big whirlpool edition.
Yes, yeah. So I'll read you one. Then she says, this is from August 30th, 80. Dad, now he's dad, he's not daddy. Dad has taken this week off work. He wants to get the whirlpool connected and into the building so he can enclose the structure. He can't finish putting up the walls until it's in. I can't see how he'll do it, but seemingly nothing defeats him. It's getting into fall, so if he wants to work on the inside, he'll have to get the walls up. Like, she writes a lot of detail.
Yeah.
About what was happening. I know she was annoyed a lot of the time, but she still knew exactly what was going on, the whole process.
Yeah, and I don't know how I know, but I know that she was annoyed by renovation. She didn't like the disruption. She liked to sort of
settle into her
cozy routine and do her things. And so I think she expressed frustration with it. That must be how I know about it.
You know, I don't think she spent a lot of time complaining, but still, we did know this. So this is 84, September 21st. Had strong wind, rain, and snow overnight. The roof in our bedroom leaked again. Then 22nd, I washed, waxed, and polished our bedroom floor. Looks great. Tonight it's leaking again. Covered bed with plastic, towels, pans to catch the dripping water. Merv says that Ruth is his nemesis. Yes.
And then he built that addition with the whirlpool with a strange roof line. And that became his nemesis. And then Bob's nemesis after
Bob. I know. It just didn't end.
Yeah. And so what do you take away from those?
Like I said, she was very aware of what was going on, every step of it, and somehow got through it. I don't know. It was a lot. What I take away is there was a love-hate relationship with that house for her. She was very tied to it. Like, she wasn't fully in love with it.
My sister Barb and I discussed some of the renovation projects that were a bit of a surprise to Helen.
Lynn has a whole section
on reno.
On the renovation projects that Dad undertook. She doesn't mention the surprise ones. So Mom goes to Calgary to visit relatives, and she comes back to find
this carpet put down that he just thought would be a nice thing. He didn't tell her.
It was over top of the hardwoods. Those
you didn't think
hardwoods.
To tell me?
Yeah. It came up pretty quickly. What didn't come off the wall was the surprise wallpaper that he put on.
These things just spoke to him. He just thought they were great.
This wallpaper had to have come from the co-op where he got everything, though. It had to have, because it had that faux Aztec pattern on it. Yeah. Remember that?
Yep.
Oh, she couldn't stand that. It stayed up for quite a while. Yeah, but...
No, she never wanted to hurt his feelings. He was looked so crestfallen. But when she got in from Calgary, she let him know what her feelings were.
Right, yeah. Helen didn't always share her feelings, but she was welcoming even in unexpected circumstances. Here's my brother Bob with a story featuring surprise guests.
Oh, but yeah, people showing up, announced, unannounced, always gracious. But she had her own thing going on as well. Happy in company. Sometimes company stayed too long. Sometimes she was sad to see company go, like the rest of us. But man, she had the ability to tune herself to the moment and to the presence of another person, instrumentally almost. Like a really good cellist tuning yourself to the hall. I've told you this story. I didn't hear it until the last year of her life in one of those conversations. But she told me this story about how she was roused by the doorbell and opened the door to see five relatives who had just showed up unannounced, expecting hospitality. What would Mom have done? Offered hospitality. With attention to detail, singular grace, and all the while, not only pleasant, but entirely in that scene. Totally in that scene. She was a hospitable woman. But to what degree was she acting hospitably when she was being hospitable? She told me that on the final day of their visit, she made, of course, a lovely meal, including a huge apple pie, which, as was her custom, she put in the porch to cool under a tea towel. This last supper was finished. Dessert was was everyone's desire. And she walks out to the porch to get the pie. And Farron,
her beloved cat,
is sleeping on the tea towel on the pie. And she told me, it gave me a moment's pause, but I served it anyway. Revealing that underneath all of this, she was a little miffed through the whole of this this experience.
So
and she would never in a million years say anything negative about any of those people.
No.
But when she said that, I mean, yeah, how would she have judged herself in that moment? In her story, she judged herself in two ways. I did my duty, and I was a little miffed. Talk about resonant imagery. Farron sleeping on a towel on a pie. Like, why not?
That's so good. Next, Barb shares some thoughts about Helen's love for gardening at 8:24.
Everybody of that kind of nature responds to gardening and just the beauty of creation and produce, yep. You know. Lily of the Valley was so important to her. She had that beside the house and commented on it all the time in the spring. She put geraniums in the front planter, and she also put lobelia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lobelia. That's right. Tons of lobelia.
Lobelia and beautiful that. Geraniums, yeah. All kinds of colors. And in the front, she had tulips on the ground, not in the planter. She always had a way of putting them out there. Like, she really knew how to organize the plants and to make the most beauty out of it. She was always interested in furthering the beauty of her yard. You know, if there were places that needed some attention, yeah. She just constantly worked on that yard. It just gave her so much joy.
Yeah. The huge vegetable plot in the back. But she got a lot of produce out of that. Like, I remember dill and lettuce and tomatoes and cucumbers. And
yes, she did. You know, I think that she was more interested in the flower plants. It's a different kind of gardening.
Right.
You know?
But she did both. I guess maybe there was a practicality to it. They were always trying to make ends meet.
Yes, that's a good point.
And so they always had that vegetable bounty coming in. Dad loved the fresh cucumbers with buttermilk and the fresh tomatoes, you know, sliced and on toast with salt and pepper. And so she was all about providing great food too. Yeah. So she liked that. I noticed that the way she gardened, she had a little stool that she would sit on, but she would stand and bend over at the waist. Because of all the knee injuries, she couldn't kneel in the garden.
Yeah.
So she would stand there, straight-legged, bent over, and that's the way she would weed and work in the garden, uncomfortable or otherwise.
She wanted to do it.
She wanted to do it.
And it gave her a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the theme of the yard and plants, here's a letter read by Madeline, written to her by Helen, about a tree.
This letter's on my wall.
Right.
I asked her, Grandma, what's your favorite tree? Because I was thinking about painting her a tree. But this letter has a complete twist.
Well, with that little preamble, do you want to just, why don't you read that piece?
Okay. Dear Maddie, my favorite tree. It is the pine tree in our former backyard at 824. Merv brought it home after one of his work trips into the countryside. He noticed it in the ditch and picked it up. It was a small baby tree. It was planted in the center of the yard where it grew quite happily. For many years, we used to decorate it with pretty colored lights during the Christmas season. We stopped doing that as it became too tall. Imagine our surprise when, at a time of tree trimming, it was discovered that the tree had grown around a string of lights. It was high up in the trunk, so no one had noticed it. It seemed as if the tree was somehow sheltering the lights. Nature can be so interesting.
And so what makes that piece special to you?
It's so surprising. Like the twist of the lights that it grew around. It is like, oh, nature can be so interesting, you know? And she observed that. Like you can tell she had this image in her head, which seems very grandma to me, to like see something and then be like, oh, I've got to hold on to that. And then express it like very eloquently, I think. You know, there's such simplicity in it, but there's something about like the spirit that's in her writing, or like in this sort of writing where she's just focusing on this one thing very specifically, or like one moment in time, or like something that made her feel a certain way. She was just very good at portraying that.
She wrote this quickly, tore it out of her notebook, put it in an envelope, and sent it to you in response to your question about her favorite tree. So these pieces weren't necessarily something that she thought were all that special. It was something that she wrote, a recollection that she had. So she kind of dashed it off. She just had these thoughts and they came through in her ability to write. Is that the way it strikes you as well? Or
yeah, I agree with you, like that the appearance is pretty haphazard. But also I keep thinking about how, because of how well written and how carefully written every single piece is of hers, then I don't know how to say it. I don't want to be like grandma was an artist, but there's something about it that makes me feel like grandma was an artist. I think she had that thing with writing that artists have where, you know, you look at a painting and there's something that makes you feel special, but like they've put it there. You know, when you as the observer see it, you're like, oh, wow. Like, you know, that's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah.
But I never thought about it that way. I feel like she wrote with that thing that made you feel special. I mean, of course, it's because we like loved her so much. But I think there actually is inside of the craft of writing that she obviously was so good at it because she did it. It was like her job, like writing these letters, right? Because it wasn't like, now I'm going to sit down and write a letter. It was like, she was just always doing it. And I guess that's why she was so good at it, because she was always practicing it. It was just like a constant practice.
Here's Lynn with another piece on the theme of trees in the yard.
here, this story I really liked. And this is from October 2017. She says, David's friend, teacher at Nutana, agreed at David's request to trim the dead branches on the tree between our house and Barry's. Ian Cooper, a very pleasant, accommodating young man. He had the expertise, the equipment, and took away the cut branches. Bob and David helped him. Good team at work. When they were finished, he would take no payment from me or David. I was dismayed. I had already made a lunch for him. Bunwiches, pickles, grapes, Rice Krispie squares. We wrote a note. I enclosed some cash. It was only a token amount, not nearly what a job like that would cost. Then David took it to his home. As a result of a spinal infection, his wife, Nadia, can't use her legs. We received an email back that they had enjoyed a picnic in bed. What a sweet story. Yeah.
Yeah, and that is so much the way she was. She connected with everybody who came by or through. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Helen's lifelong friend, Betty Wright, was a frequent visitor to 824. Here's Bob to describe their get-togethers.
I guess it was the last year at 824. Summer, fall, maybe early winter as well. Betty Wright coming to visit on regular occasions.
Right. Yeah.
I always had a pot of coffee ready in the morning for whenever Mom was up and about. So I'd come up and there'd be Betty and Mom drinking coffee out of their City Park mugs, chatting like schoolgirls.
Yeah.
Maybe. Because they were both of an age and aware of what happens to people of an age and finding refuge in that interaction, but also knowing that refuge had to be found. So a touch of poignancy. It's not like they were transported in time and became girls in grade 11, but they found access to that. They found access to that through participating in a remembrance, like a legitimate remembrance of an event that kept on going, whose spirit was inexhaustible and could always be tapped into. She was obviously extremely grateful for those durable relationships and ineffably modified in her depth of depths, in her heart of hearts, when those foundational relationships began to attenuate or finalize. But she had access to those things, not just in their moment, but in their spirit. In family terms, I saw it most clearly when Uncle Walter would come by to eat cake and play cards. Again, like kids, but not pretending they were kids. Just with that thing that they'd hatched when they were roaming around to whatever house they were living in, entertaining themselves.
As Helen was moving from 824 and reminiscing about the good times she'd had there, she wrote a letter to her granddaughter Emma, who had been a frequent visitor, particularly on her Irish dance trips, going to Feshes, the Irish dance competitions. Here's Emma to read that letter.
Oh yeah, I am her granddaughter. I'm not sure which number of grandchild I am, but I am one of the granddaughters. What number am I? I'm 10th?
Yeah.
All right. I'm the 10th grandchild of Helen Dirksen.
There you go. Save the best for last.
Yeah, there's only three granddaughters. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the third of three. This was August 1st, 2020.
Just before you get started, did she write you quite often?
She did. Usually it was yearly on my birthday, and then a lot of bigger notes when I was a kid. And then once like her writing got a lot shakier, she would just kind of send a little letter with like, just like happy Christmas or Merry Christmas. Yeah, this is like the last big letter.
Okay. Right. Okay. So this is a letter from 2020, August 1st, 2020.
Yeah. My dear Emma, well, officially at 12 noon today, 824 6th Avenue North will no longer be mine. Yesterday, when your parents, Auntie Barb, and I were there to say our last goodbye, was rather a heartbreaking moment. The house was so clean, so empty, yet so full of memories. I wonder what will be there now. Wonder what the new owners will do with it. For me, I say, bless this house. It has been a wonderful family home for so many years. Now with COVID around, the fesh times no longer happen anymore anyway. I want to tell you, though, that those were such great weekends. You and your mom came bringing excitement into my fairly quiet life. I enjoyed seeing the gowns, the shoes, hearing the gossip, but the poor feet. It will never happen again, but it's such a good time to remember. Thank you for the photo of the dresser. So neatly organized. Great-grandma Teason would have been so pleased. She was very neat and liked order in all things. I've been wanting to write to you ever since you gave the clock a new home. It is, as you know, an important family item to me. It was a gift to my parents at the time of their wedding in 1917 from his pupils. There is some information in the J.J. Teason book, or your mom can fill you in on the details. Thanks for that too, Emma. You made me happy. My sister Catherine just phoned me, so we had a good conversation, at least as good as it gets these days. Well, I suppose that's all for today. Enjoy the birthday and whatever treats and surprises it may bring to you. Make the best of any experiences and opportunities that come your way. With my love and all the best wishes for the years ahead. From Grandma Helen, P.S. Love the new dress. That was my new solo dress. Yeah, I got that, like the very old dresser, and I got that and I sent her a picture of all the drawers, and she was over the moon about how I organized them neatly. They're not like that anymore. Because those have not been organized, I think, since that photo was taken.
hey, keep that quiet. She can still hear you, you know.
Oh, I know she can still hear me, trust. As far as I know, the clock, yeah, it was like, it was kicked or something.
Or it was stepped on.
It was stepped on. It was stepped on, and then they had
almost
to.
Almost the end of their journey.
At like the very end of when
almost
they were
in Roster.
When they were in Roster, and it got stepped on. But now it's okay. It's actually hanging up on our wall, which is pretty cool. And it's pretty cool too, because I mean, I'm really into my entire degree is in like artifacts and stuff. So to have it is really cool, because I was getting a little bit giddy over the history of it, which is pretty fun.
I forget exactly what words there were there, but kind of like. Mm-hmm. I hope you have a great time. Live life.
Yeah, just live it up. Yeah, make the most of any opportunities, which is great. Like, that's kind of what she always said. It's just, you know, if things come up, just do it. There's no point in not, so.
Yeah, I love that.
That was really good.
The last birthday card she sent to me, she said, keep doing the things that bring you joy.
That's cute, actually. That's super cute.
What are your other impressions of that letter when you look at it?
It's so funny because she pulls in the fesh memories, which mom, like I still compete. Back then we used to go so much, like 4 times a year. So those were always really fun. And I'd always bring up, like, there was always so much gossip, which is hilarious. And so she'd always eat it up and would want to talk about it. And she'd go, oh, so what's happening? We'd sit at the table and we'd be having dinner and I'd be talking away. And she'd go, oh, so like, who are the names? Who's doing what now? I'm like, okay, let's go into this whole thing. And mom and I would just talk for hours with her. She was into it, as far as I know. And she would always talk about how my feet were always looked so destroyed. It was just hilarious. But yeah, it was always really, really good. And she loved the dresses too.
Betty loved the dresses.
And Betty loved the dresses. Her friend Betty loved my dresses.
Betty would be over.
Yeah. Betty would come over and she would, you know, I would try it on and show them it was great and show it off. So.
Oh, that's a great letter. Thanks for reading
it. It's a really good letter. Yeah. I'm glad that I could figure it out, because it's her writing is so shaky in this one. There are others where it's very clear, but you can definitely tell this one's shaky.
Yeah.
But this letter is probably the most, like, the happiest one that I have, I'd say. And it has the most kind of substance to it when I was old enough to kind of know who she was as a person, not just like a random, oh, happy birthday. Like, this is kind of what I did this week. It's just a really nice letter. I like this one.
Emma's mom, Lynn, concluded this session by sharing some interesting thoughts about Mom and the house.
Oh, well, this was that we all got that letter from her where she was talking about having to move and saying, I don't feel like myself anymore. 824 Helen has become another person. So there was that. I think that's all I've got. Unless you want one quote from Gaston Bachelard before I go.
Yeah.
Because I talked about the house, right? And I just recently read Bachelard's Poetics of Space. So something he says here is, the house shelters daydreaming. The house protects the dreamer.
The dreams. And so when Emma reads about that very pivotal day when she was, when she actually left the house, and so the dreams and the dreamer were displaced.
I would say so.
Well, thanks, Lynn, that was fun.
All right, that was, wow, that was interesting. I didn't know where that would go.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the stories of Helen's longtime home. I also hope the series is reminding you of your family stories, and that maybe you'll tell a few in the coming days. Huge thanks to all who contributed to this episode. My siblings Bob, Barb, and Lynn. Our cousin Judith, and her sentimental husband Bob. And a big shout out to our cousins Donna, David, and Doug for their part in creating the memory book. On part 4, we also heard Lynn's daughters, Emma and Madeline. It's a great family effort there. And of course, I will acknowledge the special guest appearance by Farron the Cat. I can feel his look of disdain from across the dimensions. I hope you'll listen to part 5, the last episode in the series, on which we read pieces about loss, hope, wonder, and angels from the last couple of decades of Helen's life. If you have comments, questions, or stories of your own to share, you can email us at storiestoldbyfriends@gmail.com. That's storiestoldbyfriends, all one word. You can also leave a voicemail message on the old answering machine at 306-665-3101. We would really love to hear from you. I will end the way that Helen often ended her letters and cards. Love and hugs to you all.